You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Atamarie, ite fano, kete fakarongo mai nei, kite reo irirangi poho. You're on the 95BFM breakfast show. Last week, Stella had a little bit of an idol chat, which is very exciting, with Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age. How was it?
It was amazing. He's a very nice man.
That is awesome. Yes. What's the deal? What's happening with Queens of the Stone Age?
Well, they had a recent record released in June last year via Matador Records titled In Times New Roman, and they're now touring it, and it reaches Tamaki on February 29th at Spark Arena.
Heck yeah. Can't wait to see that, with Earth Tongue in support as well, which will be righteous to see them play at a stadium. Let's get stuck into it, eh, and have a listen to your chat with Josh Homme.
BFM.
How does it feel to have In Times New Roman out in the world and to watch people receive the work?
Somehow it feels like all the work before are chapters in a book which is kind of now closed. It feels like this is where we begin now, you know. And perhaps it's just from the life that we all experienced in the pandemic and then re-emerging from that. Mm. It feels like not just a fresh page, but a new notepad, so to speak. Yeah. And I also, you know, the making of the record wasn't simple. And so I think it was so focused on trying to do a good job that I just forgot to realize that it would be perceived, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it was really, you know, everyone's been really nice, you know, and everyone's really liked, really liked the record. And so I'm just like, it feels like an added bonus that is really out of my control, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the record is unsurprisingly phenomenal. The lyrics are really straightforward, they're really cutting, and I think it is rooted in what fans love about Queens of the Stone Age. But it also feels like it steps into new territory. There are kind of orchestral moments in amongst those massive riffs. Was there a distinct choice to do that, or was it just what kind of came?
I knew that the subject matter should match the sound, or the sound should match the subject matter. And so the sound of our band should be its most brutal and raw.
Mm.
It should be most fraught with leaving like little mistakes and time signature changes, tempo changes, like just leaving them in so that it resembled what the overall sentiment was. And then it just dawned on me one day that if that record was riding in a vehicle, this brutal, raw record, then perhaps in another world, there's the orchestrated version of this record, the sweet, you know, lilting version in another vehicle. And if that vehicle just sideswiped the other one every once in a while, if it just took over, if it drowned, if the brutal side was drowned by the sweet side of it every once in a while as a reminder, if it just took over, you know? I mean, I guess I'm always trying to think of what have I not yet heard? What have we not yet done? What makes the least sense? You know, I mean, sometimes it's almost like the unsupply, undemand. If I see it out there, I realize we don't need it. I'd like to operate in the dark corners between things, that space. And so this record, those orchestral moments, sideswiping and taking over the music, just felt really freeing and sort of beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
Like kicking the music out of the way with other music, you know?
As you just mentioned, you said that you didn't like to edit this project after recording, but that lack of correction on quote-unquote errors, it doesn't give an impression of looseness, more flux. What is it about editing that deterred you for this?
I think my feeling, or where I get most excited, is in capturing a moment, capturing an emotion. They're not perfect. They have scars, flaws. They're mostly wrong and partially right, or mostly right and partially wrong. They're this ratio of feeling and complication. And the goal of music isn't to be on a click track and make sure that it's appropriately on a click track. It's to be played as it's felt. I think ultimately, when music is overcorrected or tuned and quantized and all these things that you can do now, it gets really safe and emotionless for me. I mean, I'm sure there's moments where on the treadmill that's great, or just dancing on Molly, you know? But even still, I think dance music, I love the dance music that is sonically flawed, you know, on purpose, and that it accepts that perfection is something you strive for, but not something you want to achieve, you know? Not something you would expect to achieve, because it turns out that perhaps perfection is a little boring, you know?
On the topic of process, when you are writing, is it a tone that inspires a riff, or is it the other way around?
Well, I sort of move at the speed of inspiration. It's clear that sometimes just the sound, the tonality of something on guitar can dictate, you know? The first song, Obscenery, the guitar tone just was so stupid and like it was almost like a brutish mob of a tone, and it felt nice to follow that stupidity down the road, that it, you know, kick that can down the road. But there's a lot of moments, honestly, melody drives most things for me. So you know, cradling a melody, trying to place something interesting that's a counterpoint but doesn't destroy the main melody, but so that there's something interesting going on all the time, but that it doesn't derail the melody. I mean, that's sort of a, I think that's why sometimes people think, I've had people say it took 5 listens or 6 listens for me to get it, and to start to like your record. I think that's my first thought is always, I'm so glad someone gave us the chance to listen to it that many times. And the second is, that makes sense, because it's not just so simple that there's a lot of little trinkets and detail work going on. And sometimes it takes a second to absorb that, all that, to see. It's like listening to how a puzzle piece works, you know?
Yeah.
I understand even when we're simple, we're a little complicated.
Down the bar.
as much as we love the new work, I must ask about the Desert Sessions on account of them being fantastic and also on account of our listenership really loving a deep cut. Do you have a favourite story from that project?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the very first song, Move Together, you know, there's always a moment. The most crucial part of the Desert Sessions from my end is to start the first thing. If everyone's just being themselves, the amalgam of us all being ourselves on top of each other will be gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the roots where something comes from, where it emanates from, can be of little significance. But because it's the first step, it's the beginning of this process, and it's important. So there was a looper, like an old 80s shitty looper, and yeah. It went boom, 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 and that's all it did. And I ran out to Billy, you know, I said, this is how we can start something amazing. This loop is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, you know? And I ran out to Billy, and he goes, oh, Gibbons immediately heard what was really going on. And he just started saying, maybe we could go sit down. And the second that happened, I don't know. You know, music has a way of giving you that childlike feeling.
Mm.
Because the second that happened, I was so excited that I was like, you know, little clapping, you know, bouncing up and down. Because I think that's an interesting part about in music. We're always saying we play together, which is really, it's not different than what I said when I was five.
Yeah.
Do you want to play with me? I think there's a continuous ability to tap that sort of childlike curiosity and excitement over something that to outsiders seems insignificant, you know, that I've just always loved.
Yeah, that's some incredible Genesis points. A cheeky question. Are there any plans for Them Crooked Vultures?
Well, I always say that's Dave's job to put us together. It's Dave's job to put us together, and it's my job to bring in a bunch of raw material that we sculpt, and that's our roles are defined very well in that band. And I think because I'm always ready to do more Vultures, but I would ping pong that responsibility back to Dave.
Got it. And what can audiences expect from the set in New Zealand? Is it going to be primarily tracks from the new record, or will stuff from across the catalogue make an appearance?
Well, we did this thing where we said we need to learn 60 songs. I think we have 100 and something.
Mm.
You know, it's like we need to learn 60, and we'll rotate those 60 for the first half of this.
Right.
Then in the second half, we'll open up everything to everything and playing things that we've never played, rarely played, sometimes played, and all to just, I want to play, every time we put out a record, I want to play all 10 songs. but that's, we come to this realization too that nothing should be longer than 2 hours. It's just too fucking long, honestly, if it's longer than that. And so it'll be, how do we play as many new songs? And especially on this next Australia-New Zealand tour, how do we fit as many sort of, for every hit, there needs to be a deep cut to counter it off, you know?
Mm.
So I think the set lists are gonna vary and be quite wild, honestly.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.